the bottom line.
You know, welcome, everybody. It's going to be a fun one today. It's always exciting to speak to a friend that is stepping out. Lauren Davis, a mom, a daughter of God, a mom, a wife, and now also someone who just said it's time to step up into public office. The nominee for the Republican Party for the Dallas County Judge race. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me. This is a little dream come true. From my first time I saw you on Glenn Beck talking about South Africa to all the way to here. It's super cool.
I have really enjoyed, honestly, and it's just an open conversation, all things go. I don't want to make this conversation just about the political race. Mm-hmm. And we're not going to do that. I really want to just talk about you as a person. I've gotten to know Ben, your husband, an amazing guy, a really engaged father, know your kids. I mean, we've done some fellowship together. Your sons are dynamic. You got a stunning, amazing young daughter who's just working through, you know, a lot of the challenges that your family had to face. I think because of the pandemic, some of those things. So let's backtrack a little bit. I want to go way back. Yeah. Like where were you born?
I was born outside of Houston. And okay. Then grew up most of my life in Canyon Lake, Texas. So okay. Small
you're,
town
you're a
in
Texan
the hill country.
Girl.
Yeah, Texas through and through.
Through and through. Yes. Is Ben from Texas?
No, he's a military brat. He's been all over. I think he was born in Kansas, but he's been everywhere from Germany to Wichita, Kansas. And we met in high school when we were 16 because his dad retired from the – he's a retired lieutenant colonel in the Air Force. So was his grandfather. And so Lackland Air Force Base in San Antonio is where he – ended his military career. So that's you know, the big city from the hill country. San Antonio.
No doubt. From the hill country, it is a big city.
We used to go to town to go to the grocery store. We're like, we're going into town.
I can relate from Africa. We did, no doubt. Single gas station, one road in, one road out. And we got in South Africa, the farm communities. We actually have what they would call in the U.S. Citizens Police, where every night your neighbor could be, no joke, your neighbor could be, you know, a mile to 2 miles away from you. It could be like, you know, 2,000 acres away because these farm communities are so widespread. So that CB radios, and every night the farmers, and still today, they would radio in and just checking in with the family. Hey, it's Boyens checking in with the Davis. Davis good. Everybody's good. Everything's fine because there's so much crime. But that's how it would be. And then if a family needed something, it was a radio call. Or if a fire broke out, it's no fire station. It's the the farmers, the neighborhood who come together and go. And so, and then we would drive to the city, which now looking back, it's not really a city. It's just a town because it had a grocery store and you go to the city and stock up for the month and do those things. No, it's amazing. Lauren, in growing up, was there ever a time, okay, let me ask this. Did you play sport?
Yes.
What did you play?
Softball, actually a state championship softball player.
Wow.
Yeah.
What position?
I was right field on varsity, but had the weakest arm. But when I needed it, God stepped up for me and gave me a little extra.
I didn't know that about you.
So Smithson Valley, we were the first sports team in the entire high school to win a state championship was girls softball. We had the most amazing coaches. They totally refined my character. They were tough as nails, like run you till you puke.
But see, this is why, and I didn't know this, and we haven't had this for some reason. I don't know why I haven't, and I normally lead with this. I normally know the people around me if they're athletes or not, but actually, I see it in your character, and that's why I'm asking. Because, and it's just, for those of you who are not athletes out there, there's other ways that you can learn this toughness. But if you're an athlete, man, and you play on team sport, it's just going to be drilled into you. It's going to be galvanized into you. You learn, either you cave or you conquer.
Yes, and our coaches were as hard on us off the field as they were on the field. So they led Fellowship of Christian Athletes at our high school. Yeah. And they were probably some of the first strongest believers that I had come in contact in my life because my mom and dad were atheists. They did not believe in God whatsoever. For whatever reason, their life led them down a path of non-believing. But the greatest gift they ever gave me was not telling me no. They never told me no.
to allowed you to explore your faith in Christ, and then coach has spoken to your life, much mm-hmm. like mine. My mom is a rock solid, mm-hmm. But I was raised without a dad, so coaches spoke Christ character, and Christ mm-hmm. character sometimes came with a whooping.
Yeah, yes.
I mean, just yes.
They can't coach.
Shellacking.
Our coaches we saw when they retired. They recently retired, and they're like in the Texas Hall of Fame for coaching. I mean, these yeah. are husband and wife, exceptional human yeah. beings, the Daigles, Lisa See, and Wayne Daigle. But it was tough. Like, some of the hardest days of my life were them, and they were with them, and they said that they can't coach like that anymore.
No, we've got so soft as a nation. Oh my gosh, we're soft. Mm-hmm. We are soft. I mean, I was watching a little bit of an NFL game last night because I'm watching with my son who's 3, and we are making him a man.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Dude is a man. He is. So we watch football and we do things, and we, you know, had him. I mean, I bought him a bicycle. I bought him a bicycle, okay? This bike's for 10-year-olds. Mm-hmm. He's 3.
He's probably big enough for
I did it on purpose. No, he's a giant 3-year-old, but I did it on purpose. He's mm-hmm. a 42-pound 3-year-old. I mean, he's a massive kid. But his feet is this high off the ground, okay? He's riding his bike. It's got training wheels on it, but he's riding this giant bike, right? Mm-hmm. And even back on our team, like, you're crazy. I'm like, no, I want this guy to take on giants.
Yes.
From day one, I want him to just say, it's never too big, it's never too, you know. Mm-hmm. And so he's like, from when he could speak, he was like, truck, truck, truck. So I just switched from an SUV to a truck. I got a truck now. And so now we're in trucks. I mean, it's just, but you breed it early is what mm-hmm. I'm saying. So you don't know in your life when God calls you to do what. Did you ever in high school think you're going to end up in politics?
No. In fact, I went to fashion school initially.
Well, that's another world.
Yeah, I went to Fashion Institute of Technology. Again, my parents never told me no, and I'm the first person in my immediate family to go to college. My mom and my dad had a GED. He didn't even finish high school. My mom had high school education, massage therapist, and they just didn't tell me no. And so I'd watch fashion shows on TV and just said, I want to do that. And big dream, we couldn't afford to go. We didn't go look at colleges. We don't go on college tours. I just used the internet, said that's the best one in New York, and I applied. It was in 2002, so right after 9/11. And I said, I want to go there. And my parents didn't tell me no. I got in. And my dad died that summer. It's a whole nother thing. But he died that summer, and I still went. But my mom dropped me off for the first time. I'd never been to New York City in my life. And she was dropping me off, and I said, good luck. And I said,
that's
all right, here we go.
That's a city, by the way.
That's a real
city. That's a city.
That's a far cry from Canyon Lake, Texas at that time.
Or San Antonio.
Or San Antonio.
I love San Antonio. The river, I mean, it's such a beautiful place, right? Mm-hmm. But that's New York's a city. Yeah. And especially in 2002, that climate and a united country. And I mean, New Yorkers, that was a beautiful New York
at that time.
New York at that time was stunning. I mean, it was just...
I remember going down to Ground Zero with all the rubble, and mm-hmm. my dad was very passionate about the country. My dad loved the country. He had an addiction. He died drinking and driving. The last time I ever saw him was my high school graduation. It was the last day I hugged him. But I remember going through 9/11 with him. He was like, you know, he was a drinker, so you never know. It could have been alcohol, this or that. But he had his little chihuahua or family dog named Jocko.
Come on.
And he was like, Lauren, I'm going down to Ground Zero with Jocko. I'm getting a plane ticket. I'm going to go help with this country. He just loved his country so much. And I think that seed got planted around that time with my dad. He was just a good man. And he loved community. He loved people. He loved me. In all his trouble, I was still daddy's girl. He showed me unconditional love. And but he loved this country so much. So he didn't have any money. He didn't have a ticket to buy me to go to New York to check out of college, but he was going to spend his life savings on a ticket. And I was like, Dad, you really cannot go down there with the dog, with the chihuahua. And but he loved the country. And so when I went down there and went to Ground Zero, I got a little piece of the rubble for him, put it on his grave. And
yeah. I wow. Mm-hmm. So many similarities in our story. You know, I was raised, you know, without a dad, but he came into my life later, but he was also dealt with alcohol, and alcohol is also what took his life.
It's a beast.
He didn't know the Lord until 2 years before he passed, and then he did. He gave his life to the Lord, and he reconciled. It was an amazing thing. But when I say we're soft, I was watching football with my son. It was last night. And a quarterback gets tackled and an lineman falls on the quarterback and they say roughing the pass. And I go, this is football. What are we doing? And it's gotten so soft. The whole culture is soft, you know. And so we don't raise young boys any more tough. We don't have the coaches anymore that's willing to get in your face. And coaches knew for me, if you needed performance out of me, you did not ask me. You did not give me a rah-rah speech. You got in my face.
Mm-hmm.
I operate on challenge.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
I'm not the guy that you go, leave him alone. He's got his Walkman. Remember the Walkman?
Yes.
You know, for you kids who don't know Walkman, yeah. But his earphones on and leave that guy alone. No, you needed to get in my face on the sideline and say, Boyens, I need points now, right now.
Yes.
That just is something happens. There's a button that flips, a switch flips in me to just go, oh, bring it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a guy that plays, it's got to matter. And so, you can't drive those people anymore today because it takes a challenge. Even in the military now, they're talking about softening up the military. We had a Navy SEAL sitting in that chair. We're talking off camera about, hey, are they going to change? Are they going to change Hell Week? Are they going to change? You know, and he's like, Yaku, there's talks about, you know, well, what if a woman can? What do we do? And I'm like, you can't put a woman through Hell Week. Not that I say a woman can't do it, but why?
Yeah.
We need to get back to a tougher culture.
Yeah.
A tough culture because here's the reason why. If you don't instill it and breed it into a child when he's young, okay, when the call comes, and I'm just going to say in her early 30s.
Yeah. 38. I'm 38.
Okay. When the call comes in her 30s.
Yeah.
To take on giants, to defend your family, to take on the establishment, to take on an incumbent who has held a seat that has come into agreement with evil, like Clay Jenkins, the Dallas County judge, right? To take on these demonic monster forces, you don't just pick that up one day.
No.
There's no way. If it wasn't there as a child, if you didn't go through adversity, if you didn't fight challenge, the whole deal of having an alcoholic father, I had it. It's
brutal.
Brutal. It's 27 brutal. Years. First 14 years, I prayed for my dad to be sober. The last 13 years, I stopped praying for him to be sober. I just prayed for him to be saved. I just wanted him to know God.
It's the only way through an addiction.
Okay?
Yeah.
But I mean, you're fortified and you're tempered in the fire. And I just don't think people can pick it up. And this is why I think some of the politicians today... People that have an epiphany, I think I'll be a politician, they get railroaded.
Yeah.
They get run over.
Eat you alive.
Oh my gosh. Because it's not in their character. It's not in them. And you don't pick it up. Am I making sense?
No, I feel like where I'm at with running for Dallas County Judge is the true sum total of my entire existence. It brought me to that moment. Like there's nothing that could have been different because it would have thrown me off this path from struggling with my dad with his addiction. And he wasn't just kind of addicted. He was in and out of rehab. He was incarcerated. He had a breathalyzer in his car. I would cry at his feet and beg, please, daddy, please. Some of the last words I said to him, because he relapsed, right? He was sober for so long. And I found him just in a horrible state, passed out on the bathroom floor when I was about 16. And I just begged him, please, daddy. I said, do you want to see me get married? Do you want to see me grow up? And he said, oh, baby girl, I don't have a problem. Yeah. And I said, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. That's when I kind of like fully understood the inside. But even that, right, I used to wish my dad different or that he didn't die. And I realized because he died, I got to have a better relationship with him in the spiritual realm, right? Because he's all healed and he's his perfect self there. And I could talk to him and, just because someone dies doesn't mean they're dead. They're still with me. And once I realized he did his best and that it was upon me to do better, that's when I really took ownership of my life. And luckily that happened at an early age. And so the last 18 years, right, that happened when I was 18. So these next 18 or so years, I've really taken that to heart. So I've invested in myself. I had a life coach. I've read all the books. I've done all the things. And I took it upon myself to grow myself the rest of the way because I didn't have parents who had the capacity to give me what I truly needed to be my most self. But I don't know that any of us do because that's a human thing. Yeah. And really God is our ultimate parent. And so once I leaned in and became baptized and really got into took my faith from my head to my heart is when I grew leaps and bounds. Yeah. And so it was through all that, through the hard times that got me here. There's no way I don't wish a soft, easy life on anybody. That is not the point. It's to be refined in the hard times. And you're right, the kids. So for example, when my boys were growing up, they're 16, 14, and my daughter's 12 now. When they were little playing YMCA sports, YMCA basketball, mm-hmm. That was when I guess I did my first protest. They being the YMCA, turned off the scoreboard. Our team was getting beat, and that's their policy. Our team was getting beat bad, like whatever, 60 to 20. And their policy is when it gets too much, they turn it off. And my son, Pierce, this is Pierce, you know him, yeah. He's quite the fighter. He's looking up at the scoreboard going, Mom, where are my points?
Yeah. My points are gone now too. They just eradicated everything I've done.
All the points are gone.
Yeah.
Yes. And so I walked over to the director's office and I said, I'm on the losing team. Turn that scoreboard back on now. My child wants to know where their points are.
Yeah.
And so they turned it on.
What are we teaching? Give up. It doesn't matter. Participation trophy.
You're getting beat so bad we can't take watching that? I mean, it was insane. Yeah. So then another mom on our losing team, it gets worse. It wasn't ever going to get better. We all know that, but that's not the point. She walks over and she asks them to turn it off. They ultimately ended up turning off the scoreboard. And I just said, this is what's wrong with our society. Here we go.
Yeah.
And that was probably 10 years ago now.
Yeah. I say this before we go to break here. Do not play. Do not play if you don't want to win.
Yeah.
And do not play from outside of the lines. Get on the field. I've got very low tolerance, zero. My wife will always say this, Yaku, you're so low on compassion and empathy. Mm-hmm. I'm just fire. Mm-hmm. And I believe that evil is real and we got to take it out. And if you're going to play, you play hard. And you learn so much from losing. So much.
Oh, you learn more from losing than you do winning.
No
you
doubt.
Learn more from getting hurt than having an easy life.
Trust me, when you lose real bad, that's when I go to a team and I go, you know, and I've
Did
done
that
a lot
feel
of
good?
And I
no.
go and I go, do not forget a moment. And,
yes.
When I played professional sport, long career, in South Africa, if you play pro sport as a rugby player, you also have to coach. Mm. It's a beautiful program where the pro athletes go and they coach at high schools.
Oh, that's amazing.
And it's one day a week. It's not you're not a full-time coach, but you coach. And it's incredible. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, here comes this superstar to your school in every school and they coach, they give back, right? And a team would lose. I'd make them sit in that locker room. I told all the parents, you do not even come ask me, where's your son?
Yeah, those are the kind of coaches
We sat after a game for over 2 hours in a locker room. I refused for them to leave because I said, you're going to soak up and feel everything. You're not going to numb yourself and forget. This was the worst beating you've had in your life, and I want you to feel it all. Replay every play in your mind. It sucks. Feel it.
Mm-hmm.
Feel it.
Mm-hmm.
Those boys turn it around. They're like, never in my life again do I ever want to experience that again. I go, then do something about it.
Yep.
You know, but that's reality. That's life, okay? But before
yes.
we go on, let me break real quick. I want to talk about another company that play to win. Glenn Story and Patriot Mobile, they play to win, man. I'm telling you. They're Christian conservatives, the only Christian conservative cell phone company in the United States that take the dollar that you pay for cell phone service and they turn it back around and they invest in constitutionally sound Judeo-Christian values in organizations and in missions like going to the border with us. They're going back to the border with us in November. Amazing things. They're doing a documentary with us about how to show the heart of Christ in a crisis situation. Check out Patriot Mobile. If you haven't yet, go there because you also vote with your dollar and make sure your dollar doesn't get repurposed into Planned Parenthood and funding the things that are attacking your family and breaking your family down. So let's make sure that we vote with our dollar. Check out Patriot Mobile. Dial 972-PATRIOT. Mention the bottom line so you can get free activation or go online and just type in the bottom line as a code and you're going to get free activation. If you're a veteran, God bless you. Thank you. They're going to really treat you well. Thank you so much. Okay, Lauren. So this is the background. Softball's a tough game, man.
Yeah,
the girls,
it's not easy.
They're mean.
That pitch comes really fast. It was like around 60 miles an hour at the time.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of smack talk, and there's a lot of diving in the dirt. And I mean, it's...
I've got my fair share of scars.
Yeah. I like that. I like challenge, right? And I think it's healthy. You know, Jordan Peterson said something the other day that I thought was just brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
He said, never stop a child doing something dangerous if it's doing it safely.
Mm-hmm.
You go, well, how can it be safe? No, you can.
Yeah.
Race car drivers, it's a super dangerous sport. They have the skill to do it safely.
Mm-hmm.
You skydive, you body sail off of a mountain or something. It's super dangerous. You can do so. When you see a child do something super dangerous, but so my son, again, tell him the other day, Torin, don't do this. It's dangerous. And he's 3 years old. I kid you not. This is in Shields Sporting Goods. And he looks at me and goes, it is not. That is not true. And I said, no, Torin, that's dangerous. He said, I know what I'm doing.
Oh, my gosh.
And I stopped for a second. And I was like, no, he's right.
Mm-hmm.
He was in control.
Mm-hmm.
It looks dangerous, but he had to let him go. Well, Yaku, what if he falls? Then he falls.
Mm-hmm.
Then we deal with it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we're not going to train him to play at 80%.
No, that's what we're doing.
Safe.
That's exactly
what's happening in our
culture. I would say
even
less than 80%. We're training people to, you know.
Just breathe.
Just survive. Like, when have we ever signed up for that? Never.
No. So, okay. Ben.
Mm-hmm.
You marry Ben.
My lovely husband, yes.
I've now met Ben. Ben's a fighter. I've not seen Ben shy away from some really tough. I mean, the situation you guys walked through during COVID,
mm-hmm.
If I may, just
go
there.
Please, yeah.
With your children being targeted in a school
mm-hmm.
for not wearing masks, for your children being mocked,
mm-hmm.
being put on display,
mm-hmm.
literally, I was very proud of Ben in that moment for being a father that didn't just push his wife ahead and said, go, Mama Bear, go fight it. And yes, I'm talking to all the guys. If your wife is a Mama Bear, you thank God. But you better be by her side. Don't push your wife ahead as a Mama Bear and you don't step up.
Mm-hmm.
That's a coward.
Mm-hmm.
And that's literal biblical precedent for women stealing men's glory because the men wouldn't step up. I didn't see that. I saw Ben go as well. I saw Ben go head to head with Inahosa, the school superintendent. I saw Ben just go after, like Jenkins, the Dallas, school board and saying, listen, there's right and wrong, and you can't be targeting kids. So talk to me a little bit about that duo, you and Ben.
Yes.
What happened? You married. How old were you when you married?
Well, I think we were 20.
Okay.
Yeah, 20. It gets so fuzzy, as
Philippa,
you get older.
My wife was 20 when we married.
Yes, it was in 2005, August 20th, 2005. We've been together since we were 16, and I just believe God really anointed us together because we both – had this sincere calling to break the cycle in our family, cycle of addiction and divorce. My mom's divorced many times. My dad was divorced. His parents been divorced a ton of times and all struggled with addiction. My family more on that. His family is a little more educated, college educated, had careers. My dad was a maintenance man at a local tennis ranch, side hustles and things like that. So my life was a little different than his. But we got together. We felt this first time we ever met, which is hard to believe when we were sophomores, in high school, but we just felt this sincere connection that it would be with us that we stayed together to break the cycle specifically. So that common goal is what's kept us together. Marriage is hard. Marriage is so hard. It's been the hardest thing I've ever done.
There is nothing harder than marriage and life, right?
Yeah.
And you know why? Because it's the most sacred thing.
Yes.
On earth.
Yes.
It's marriage, the union between a husband and a wife to raise a family. It's no joke, man.
No. And so I think what we learned over the years, because we've worked together, we started our first business together when we were 25.
What was that?
The Gents Place, high-end men's grooming.
Which?
Yes. Which your amazing hair.
If you like the haircut, it's the Gents Place yesterday, literally. I love it, man. I love the Gents. Shameless plug for the Gents Place. Yes. We should do ads for the Gents Place on this show. But no, I love it. Yeah. So the Gents Place, fantastic.
Yeah, we love that business. We love the barber beauty industry, right? Our goal is to make men look and feel their best because we know when men are at their best, they do their best, right? Those are husbands, fathers, CEOs, et cetera. So we're really passionate about that. But Ben and I just said, we are going to break the cycle and we decided that how to do that, and we learned this through not by easy times, but by hard times, is that we have to grow at the same pace. So when I was schlepping it with the diapers and he's, you know, I'm helping behind the scenes build our business and he's out in the front. I remember this day he had, I mean, we were young. I didn't come from anything. We were so poor. I'd never had sushi before. And he went out, some guy was whining and dining him, right? Because we serve a high-end clientele. He came home late and I'm like knee deep in diapers and babies, and our middle son's had open heart surgeries, all the things. This is not easy. And he said, you know, I had sushi, and I about fell on the floor and I was like, sushi? You had sushi? I don't even know you anymore. And it was just a signal that he was growing faster than me. And so we've learned, like a car racing, going up and going back, that in order to live the life that we want and engage with our community and do hard things and build businesses and run for office, that it would require us to grow at the same pace, personal, spiritual development. And anytime we're off in marriage, we look at each other and we're like, one's growing faster than the other. So he's looked at me before and said, you better get it together. I'm leaving you behind. And I'm like, no, don't leave me behind. You know, he's tough on me and I'm tough on him. And together, that's how we grow and we do big things. So when one of us steps up to the line, right, as I did with fighting for the kids and running for Dallas County Judge, he was prepared step up with me.
Yeah.
Because and of all the years.
And it's such a blessing. It's a real blessing to have how God connected us, to have been there on that La Madeleine breakfast and sitting and talking about, hey, what do we do in this situation? Our kids, masks, all the nonsense. And there was no talk of political office at that time. And it just, God just called you. Before I get to that story, I want to go back to something that I do not just want to skim over, because we talk about coaches and softball making you tough. Talk about having a child that has to go through open heart surgery. Talk to me about that. What's that situation?
That was a wild time. So I'm in my early 20s, had my first baby. I graduated college in August and had my oldest Benjamin that September. And then 15 months later, Pierce came. So I had a 15-month-old at home. Ben is in the height of his career at that time before we started the Jen's Place. And I'm going through pregnancy just fine. I give birth to this beautiful 8-pound, 10-ounce boy, Pierce. He's like born a little football player. He's so big and chunky. This is my second cesarean. So he's released from the hospital and I'm waiting to get released. This is around Christmas time. He was born December 12th, 2007. And the doctors the pediatrician makes one more round and says, you know, they call me on the phone. I'm waiting to get discharged. And they said, you know, this heart murmur just doesn't sound quite normal. We're gonna look into it. Next thing I know, they're taking him by ambulance. It was a really rainy day. Otherwise, he would have gone by helicopter down to Cook Children's in Fort Worth. And they tell me, we can't tell you yet. And he has lines in his forehead and lines in his arms. And like, we have no idea what's going on. Just, it's not good. And then they tell me, you know, he's going to have heart surgery to save his life. And they figured out a little arterial vein that's normally closes, by God's grace, did not close. So left oxygenated blood pumping to his body, so he didn't suffer any adverse effects. And he had 12 hours of life-saving surgery at 5 days old. And
5 days old.
5 days old. His heart's the size of a walnut. And supposed to be 6 hours of surgery, ended up being 12 because they had to do a full repair on his whole aortic artery. So it was, they literally moved his God-given pulmonary artery over to function as his aortic and gave him I call artificial, this is not, you know, science speak here, an artificial pulmonary artery. His aortic arch was narrowed, so no blood was getting through his aortic artery. He had a hole in his heart. And then they had to readjust his coronary arteries, which was the second 6 hours of surgery because it was in a bad spot. And so he was literally unrecognizable when
it
came out.
How old are you at this time?
I think like 23.
23 years old.
23, 24, yeah.
Walking through a 5-day-old baby. This is your second child.
It's my second. You had a 15-month-old at home.
Okay. You have a 15-month at home. And then a child is going through open heart surgery 5 days in. That is walking through fire.
Yes, yes.
That is meeting God, number one.
Yeah.
That is testimony. That is a reason to praise God. That is a reason to say, oh, God is real. Lauren, there's nothing in life. that they can throw at you.
No, it really isn't.
I mean, it's, and this is what I'm talking about, why I want people to not shy away from challenge. There's this joke in my house. Even my seven-year-old, they say it like it's a joke. I know, Dad, there's no challenge, just opportunity.
Yes.
I said it yesterday, and they all look at me, like the whole house, and they go, Dad.
Come on, Dad.
We know this. I'm like, I'm going to say it a bazillion times.
Oh, it matters. It matters.
It's just opportunity.
My dad always said, it's not how you start, Lauren, it's how you finish. It's not how you start, it's how you finish. And he always told me that. And that really led my faith journey too. Because, right, God will take you all the way to the end.
So how is he now?
Pierce, I mean, he has to have more surgeries. So it's just a reality for him. But
still now he's going to have more surgery?
Yeah, probably in the next couple of years.
Okay.
So he has to get a valve replacement every 10 or so years unless there's a medical improvement. And right now that technically takes an open heart surgery. So that first surgery being that long, he was unrecognizable. I saw his heart beat inside his chest. They left his chest open for 3 days post-surgery to allow the swelling to go down because it couldn't close his chest. I've never seen anything like that. I couldn't stop crying. I was known for the lady who just cried the whole time. Like I couldn't get it together post, you know, second cesarean and in a less than, you know, about a year. Yeah. It was tough. He had his second surgery. He had a balloon angioplasty midway through. He had a second surgery at 1 year old. He had another balloon angioplasty that was unsuccessful, and then had his third surgery at second grade. And that one was a really defining one. And this is where we had a life coach in our life this time. God is so good. He was preparing us for something we didn't know we needed to be prepared for yet. Because you never really know when the next one's coming.
Yeah.
We go to annual appointments. So the next one came. He had the balloon angioplasty. And he said, Lauren, this is the life coach. Lauren, that child only knows the reality you construct for him. So if you are fearful, he is fearful. So he said, Lauren, it's your responsibility to construct his reality. So we said, okay, we took that to heart. And so when we told him he had to have the balloon angioplasty, he's just such a cute little boy too, his eight-year-old, like think of an eight-year-old. It was on Cinco de Mayo and it happened to be Taco Tuesday. And he's like, I know why they scheduled that day, ducks, it's Taco Tuesday. And we're like, sure did, buddy. So we did a whole thing. We decorated his recovery room at Cinco de Mayo. We got him a sombrero and then we bought tacos for the entire cardiac floor. And so post-surgery, he was in a sombrero and going around a little red wagon on the cardiac floor, passing out breakfast tacos to the whole floor.
Come on.
Right? Because that showed him how to get through it without focusing on himself or his pain. But
I conquered.
But bust through. Yes.
Not a victim.
And so
we got victorious here.
Exactly. And we got told, well, it didn't work. It was unsuccessful. He's going to have open heart. So that was going to be a few months out. So we didn't tell him. We made the decision. Don't tell him. There's no reason to. So we waited till a week before. And we sat him down and said, hey, buddy, you're going to have your next surgery. The other one just didn't do exactly what they wanted. They're going to have to cut your chest open. But we're going to Schlitterbahn. So Schlitterbahn was a special place for me in New Braunfels, Texas, that we went to a huge water park. And we said, it's whatever Pierce wants. And Pierce, when you get back, we're going to have a pre-surgery party with your friends. And we're going to celebrate how great you feel.
Yeah.
We're going to celebrate. You're so lucky to live in Dallas, Texas. You're so lucky to have all these entire medical community around you. You're going to do so great. How lucky are you? And so we had that big party. It was like a movie screen in the backyard and candy and his friends came over. He went through that surgery. To this day, he does not remember pain or fear. You stub his toe and he'll cry like a baby. Open heart surgery, no big deal. He pulled out his own IVs. He didn't cry. He didn't fear. He didn't anticipate anything.
Yeah,
look, he got out in half the time.
Yes.
6 days instead of 12.
Because scripture says, as a man think, so is he.
Yes.
It's not the power of the mind. No, it's the truth of God.
Yes.
It's what God spoke and said, when my son hung on a tree and he died for it, he died for all of it. And I give you life and life abundantly. Mm-hmm. And I think we weaken ourselves as a culture, as a movement, as a party, as whatever, the church. I mean, the church is walking like it needs to apologize for existing. And I go, please take your tail from under your legs, look up, get your bite back, and start challenging evil. I mean, but I'm finding, Lauren, if it wasn't there in their lives early, you can't produce it. I had a coach that said, give me a maniac. Give me a guy that's a maniac. I can train him how to pull it back, but I can't put fight into a dog.
No. And God was so good and knew Pierce was a fighter. So I knew Pierce, Mark Davis Pierce is my Ben's great-grandfather, Henry Pierce, who was a Golden Gloves boxer. Super cool guy. He was on the Cinderella Man ticket back in the day.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's like he was awesome amateur boxer.
What a card that was.
Yeah, and so we just had this call, this knowing that Pierce was going to be a fighter, so we named him Pierce, and turns out he totally was. But Pierce taught us so much, to your point. Like, he taught us how to frame life in a way that was no fear, all in, and to be grateful.
And it's never done.
It's never done.
It's never done.
Never
God
give up.
God is the final word. Man does not decide. No doctor decides. No. Society doesn't decide. I mean, and I always, you know, there really is no losing in life. There's just quitting.
Yeah.
There's no losing.
There's no losing. Even well, even an addict on the street is not
lose.
Lost.
No. No. There's no losing. You just, you quit or you don't quit. And I think we quit so often. In this country at the moment, we are breeding quitters.
Yeah.
If it's tough, run. If it's too tough, just join them. You know, if if the bully comes after you, you know what? Rather you say you're transgender, you know, or rather you just, you know, join the club. We need to start teaching people to stand on values again. Have a set of values and say, no, if I'm the only one on earth, then I'm the only one on earth. What an honor that would be. Then I stand, right? And so I hear Christians all the, I'm the only Christian at my job place. I said, shut your mouth. And think for a second. God put you there. He knows you're the only Christian. What an honor is that?
What an honor. Yes.
You're sending me into that place. Yes. Okay. Then let's swing for the fences. And so I want to pull up the gents place, if you don't mind, on screen. Tell me a little bit, because there's something in the gents place. A lot of this stuff, it comes through. You have a couple, and I met a new hairdresser yesterday named Tori. Shout out to Tori at the gents place in South Lake. And I love asking them questions. Where are you from? Your history, your story. There's so much history. People have stories and they want to talk. They want to share. But you use the gents place. You guys do something interesting with suits and with the homeless. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so we're just very service oriented, and we have a company based on values. And you know, one of my main roles is being the chief culture officer within our organization, right? It's the heart. They always say Ben's, you know, kind of up the brains, and they would say Lauren's the heart. They call us mom and dad. I mean, we've had people, we've all grown up together. We started that business when we were 25. It's silly. We all raised each other. Ben and I raised each other. And so we just love it. And so I said, I wanted a company I could be proud of. I want a barbershop that focuses on men, because, you know, restoration of the man was just something that was put on our hearts. And I want a place I'd be proud for my boys to go. And that just doesn't happen by chance. It happens by intention. And so we constructed a company culture that was based on values. But they're just words on the wall unless you put them into action. And one of them is serve first. And so we started Operation Gentleman, which initially started as one initiative. And then it's branched off to two additionals. And it started off with an annual suit and sport coat drive for our veterans. Ben comes from a veteran home. We love our military. We love our military just because we're Americans. And then also it's near and dear to Ben's heart. And we said we would bring in gently used suits, and we'd bring them to the Soldier Recovery Unit down at Fort Hood every year in November for a big shopping event. So we'll be down there November 1st. And we'll put together a huge shopping event of all these gently used suits and sport coats and other things like ties. Mizzen and Main's a really cool company. They've partnered with us over the years and given us tons of shirts to put under the suits. And Dead Soxy is a cool brand that we have. They always give us socks just to complete the total outfit. And we just go down and serve.
So you go to Fort Hood, you put it on display. And then
on clothing racks, and the soldiers come in one at a time and we shop with them. We say, whatever you want. Take one or two suits. Let's take them through a line and pick out. It's like if they're at a department store, but everything's free, and we help them.
Do they buy it? No, they don't buy it.
No, it's all free. And so
but you help them. Hey, this looks good on you.
Yes.
What an experience.
Yeah. Because, it's so cool.
You put a guy in a suit.
And this is their first civilian clothes. Usually,
I know. You put a guy in a suit. That's why the military wears a uniform. That's why the Dallas Cowboys, and yes, I'm talking about the Cowboys because I live in Dallas, has a uniform. Something happens when you dress a guy.
Yes.
Something just happens. Another
shoulders
guy,
back. Another you look guy amazing.
Another guy comes out. And it doesn't mean you have to just have the suit every day, but every guy has to have a suit. And just every once in a while, even if it's just Sunday to church or just out for a date, just put it on and look in the mirror and just get inspired again a little bit.
Look and feel your best. You do your best.
Yeah.
Your physiology is 55% of an emotional state.
So surely
we teach
you
that.
See these guys smile, right?
I mean, they smile. They're so grateful. They don't even want to take. The military is some of the most humble men and women on the planet. I mean, oh my gosh, it's a life of service. So they don't like to take. But we force it on them. We make them smile. We have a great time. And we've been doing that for years. We also do every one of our annual memberships provides a meal for a homeless veteran. It's through a partnership we've had. We've done over 31,000 organization wide. And then once a month, we go down to Austin Street Center, a local homeless shelter, big one, well done here in Dallas. And I do a pop-up barbershop once a month where we provide haircuts to the homeless clients that are there. And I'll give you one quick story on that. So the haircut is so important. If you are not in survival mode, you're probably not recognizing how much it makes a difference, your ability and access to go get your hair done. It is a life changer. But
actually, if I can interrupt you, it is an absolute method for traffickers to traffic particularly black girls from the projects. Ugh. And all they do is they take them to go get a hair weave.
Mm.
That's how little it takes.
That's crazy.
At times. To get that girl, to give this pimp her heart.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
That's how important it is.
Yeah, it's extremely important. It's on our body. Mm-hmm. It can create a look.
Yeah.
Like, it's just so important. And so down at the shelter...
It's dignity, though.
Dignity, yeah. It's on full display. Yeah, and so that pimp is probably, you know, using dignity and perverting
to
it to coerce. And we use dignity to take people into a better place, right, for the kingdom of God. And with the homeless, you can see that so raw. And this one woman came to us a few months ago. Her hair was matted well over a year since a comb had been through it. I mean, I'm so matted. It took 2.5 hours, kitchen scissors, while dead bed bugs fell from her head. And one of our team members did that from the Jen's place, right? We recruit volunteers from all over the industry.
Yeah.
And she goes, you know what, Lauren? I didn't want to come today. I was really busy. I'm tired. It's because these are on Sundays, every second Sunday of the month. And she goes, I think God brought me here just to do this one head of hair. You know, and she was in tears. And so the volunteers, the people getting the service.
Everybody.
And we were down just this past Sunday and we were short on volunteers. So I got to do a blow dry. I'm like, I've been blowing out my hair since I was like 13. I certainly can do this. And so I got to blow out her hair. I hadn't done someone else's hair before. I'm not a cosmetologist, I'm a stylist, but I got to do this woman's hair and make it beautiful. I mean, it's probably the best thing I've done in a long time.
Yeah.
Was give this woman a blowout. It's magical what happens.
No, it's care. It's being selfless, extending it outside of your comfort zone and your level.
Yes.
And I always say this, it's so powerful. My mom is a rock star. She is just an unbelievable woman. God's given her a gift with children, 45 years in education, and she has a gift. She can walk into any family with any child and any learning disability, and the child changes. Around this country, doctors, they'll bring it and say, my child can't learn, grades are down. She's magical. She connects. She told me one day, she said, Yaku, I want you to, not always, but at a given time, I want you to get down on a knee and get down to your kid's eye level, right? I've done this in the airport. Randomly, right? There is something that happens when you approach a human being at their level, whether it's a physical level. Or you show up on the street corner in just, you know, casual clothes and say, I'm coming to you in your place, in your situation. And I'm not going to ask you to be something different to come to me, which is what I want the church to start doing. Right. I'm coming to you, whether it's lowering myself or physically showing up or, you know, touching this head of hair that, you know, and. Something happens. It disarms people. It restores life and dignity into them. It makes them believe that, okay, humanity is not all evil and corrupt. There is hope. Just blow drying someone's hair can change a life. That's actually shockingly, Lauren, how little it takes sometimes.
I know. I mean, for good or evil, right?
Yeah,
all these things can be used for both in your example, but I mean, I almost still feel my hands like tingly from it. Like it was just such a gift for me to get to blow dry her hair. It was such a gift.
Yeah,
and that's the work we do. So it's serve first, get the words off the wall at the Jen's place and put values in action. Attitudes are contagious, spread good. It's another one of our values.
How can people donate suits?
Yes, yeah.
So they go to a gent's place.
Yeah, go to gent's place, bring in your suit.
If you could just, Rebecca, just click on, I don't know.
Locations, maybe?
Go to locations, if you don't mind. Yeah, Lauren, this is yours. Just, so we got Bentonville, Arkansas, which I love Bentonville, Walmart.
Bentonville's cool,
Deer Park, Illinois, Lake, Leawood, Kansas City, Las Vegas. Oh, yeah, you're in Vegas.
Summerlin, yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Austin, Texas, Dallas, Texas, Frisco, Houston, San Antonio, Southlake. And I'm doing this because there's some people that are just listening on a podcast. If you're on a podcast, you're just listening, go to thegentsplace.com. And, of course, Fort Worth, Texas. So somewhere on this website, they can connect. If you click on memberships, Rebecca, it is a membership-based program, which I love. You get in. Honestly, you get in there, guys, and you – I've been to others. I've been to the boardroom and others. And look, I'm not trying to throw shade on anybody, but I'm just telling you it's different. When you walk into the gent's place, it's a different culture. It's a different culture. It's true.
Well, and we taught our team members. We invest in our team. So then they, of course, invest in you. And we taught them all basically how to be mini life coaches, right? You have an obligation when that gentleman sits in your chair to turn him out, not just looking better, but feeling better about life. So we feel a sincere obligation to ask only positive, empowering questions. What are the best parts of your day? What do you love most about, you know, fighting sex trafficking? What do you love most, you know, if you were in the chair about doing your podcast? Who's the coolest person you've talked to? What's the most inspiring conversation you had this week versus, you know, how's the day going? You know, you might get my mom died or my dog died.
Or other yikes. Salons where the stylist talk about their life.
Yes. Talk, yeah.
I mean, yes. Good gracious. I mean, and that does not happen at the gent's place. No, it's amazing. Okay, Lauren, I've just got to go there. In the process of your kids at Dealey, going through this situation, then homeschooling, that whole transition, then finding another place to place the kids, you became aware of the impact, which we have felt for years, that a county judge can have on a community.
Mm-hmm.
Dallas County Judge, I would argue, is arguably probably one of the most important county judge positions in the country, because so goes Dallas, so goes Texas. I mean, it is significant, the amount of power and influence. There's not a nonprofit in this country that does not come to Dallas to try and raise capital.
Yeah.
There's not a for-profit company that doesn't come through Dallas, Texas to try and raise investment dollars. I mean, Dallas County is power, significant power. And if it's tilted in the wrong direction, it's very destructive. And it has been.
Yes.
It has been very destructive. It's low on crime. Clay Jenkins is nowhere on crime. He basically runs, you know, I would say a nepotist, you know, system on steroids, where they control everything, his family legacy from Waco, the whole deal, and how they within the law firms and the things they do. Yeah. And it's not for the people, and it's time for Clay to go.
Yeah.
And it has been, because for us, they don't prosecute crimes against children. They don't prosecute pedophilia. We've got teachers teaching that has been caught in other counties or caught in Dallas ISD and then just placed in Euless ISD, in Fort Worth ISD, and then not going behind bars after they've, you know, abused children. They're soft on crime.
Yeah.
Something is happening this year. You saw it, and what happened? God spoke to you? What happened? How did you decide to run against Clay?
Yes. Well, I think it's, through my kids, right? Kids are so special. We walked through the fire again together, this time as an entire family, when we fought the mask mandates this time last year. So again, Pierce open heart surgeries, my daughter Caroline. And so we just took a stand. So it's just so simple, but not easy. Simple, not easy. And we just had said, no, we're not going to comply anymore. I'm the parent. I'm the one who cleaned that child's incision, right?
Yeah.
Nobody, Superintendent Hinojosa at Dallas ISD, Clay Jenkins wasn't in my home trying to keep that baby alive. No, exactly. I was giving him medicine and making sure he didn't get an infection. So I'm the ultimate decider on his health care. And so them trying to force a mask on my child, right? Want to wear a mask, wear the mask. That's your prerogative. But don't force it on my child, and don't force it in order for them to access their education.
Yeah.
And that's what they did. And so we went, they were the only two, my eighth grader and fifth grader at the time this last year, the only two out of 604 that showed up without a mask on the first day of school. And so that put us into a fight where they coned off my daughter in PE class, She had to watch people in front of them, in front of her play. They built a plexiglass cage around them in the library and literally hired a substitute teacher to stand guard and say, be quiet, don't talk, sit down. And through that, through walking through that and then advocating, went to a local activist group. My friend Ann Stone runs the Deplorables, which is super. She's a champion. She left her private school because she was sick and tired of, she didn't sign up for an Antichrist agenda. She signed up for a Christian school and wasn't getting it. So she took a stand and left, started this group. And it's just a bunch of everyday grandmas and grandpas. And I went there one day and told my story. And I went, people were horrified. And I said, oh my gosh, this is really bad.
And can I say this, just so people understand, at that time, that very time, the mandate from Governor Abbott was masks in schools. Mm-hmm. The governor of Texas, okay, and I've got my own beef with Abbott, but the governor of Texas said no mask in schools. Clay Jenkins, however, in Dallas said, no, you will wear masks in schools. So there was a statewide governor's order that said, look, we're not going to make mandatory.
We're all done with these mandates.
Clay Jenkins said, no. Not only are we going to do this, we're going to make an example of these two kids. Mm-hmm. And so, okay, in my world, you want to fight? Then let's fight.
Bring it on.
Let's go.
That's my world too, apparently. And
especially when it's about my children.
Yeah. And you know, and we didn't fight. We fought to stay in business, but we didn't fight the government in the original lockdowns, right? And so I was never going to comply again to that. I've woken up. I get it. I wasn't political. I was your everyday go along to get along mom, just running her business with my husband and doing soccer and basketball. It's just life was great until government basically smacked me across the face during COVID and then this mandate.
Into everybody's lives. Whether people realize it or not, government overstepped into every single American and global, every citizen's life around the world.
They literally sat down at my kitchen table. It's what they felt like. When they took my ability to earn and put food on the table, they put them at the kitchen table. I did not invite you there and get out. So that's why we said no. And got ourselves into that. And so when I went to this group, I realized I'm not alone. Well, Anne says to me one day, random, she literally a download from God. She goes, I don't even know why I'm calling you. I was actually at our Frisco location at the Jen's place at the time. And she goes, have you ever thought about running for county judge? And it struck me in the gut so hard, I could not shake that calling. I couldn't. And then when the Dallas ISD school board trustee that I was fighting, God knew I got to make it so clear to this woman, I need to stand up that I'm going to put the only person on the planet that she would know is a phony and put him up there. So this District 2 trustee, Dallas ISD School Board trustee, Edwin Flores, says, I'm going to take on Clay Jenkins. Yo quiero freedom is what I saw online. I said, excuse me? I've been down at school board fighting you, naming you. You're the one who's sympathizing with parents calling us attempted murderers and terrorists on email. We had done public info requests. He's District 1. District 2, Dustin Marshall, instructed Hinojosa to have the IT department block our emails. So we have all this on public info requests. Yeah. It's so clear to me. And so that's why he put him up there. Because he said, Lauren, I'm going to need to make it so clear to you. And he did. And so I said, if that's it, that's all that's going to stand up. I literally kind of looked over my right shoulder, my left shoulder, and said, I guess I'm it.
Yeah, look, and I'm it, and it rocked the party. Good. Okay, because we haven't had a grip on Judeo-Christian values and constitutional values in Dallas County since, heck, 2006, okay? Yeah. It's been forever, right? And it's unacceptable. This is Dallas. This is Texas, for crying out loud.
It's Dallas, Texas.
We're Americans here, and we love God, and we love country, and we love people, but we're not... You're taking that on. You won the primary.
With 69% of the vote.
Praise God. You ran against Edwin Flores. You won the primary. And now you're up against Clay Jenkins. Mm-hmm. November 8th. Is hello hour. This is it. And I want to ask every single person in Dallas County to just ask yourself the following question. Do you want to keep a guy in an office that has literally been found on the wrong and guilty of atrocious things? We're going to break something on the Blaze today that I'm going to encourage people to watch the Blaze. Mm-hmm. Okay. That decided that kids should be in lockdown where the governor says you don't have to.
Yeah.
That is found to conspire on so many levels on other things through COVID and exploiting a bad situation.
Yeah.
Someone who's not for your child, or are you actually going to say, no, it's time to take the power back and just be with a mama bear? That's just standing for all moms. And so I'm going to ask you a bold, blunt question. Mm-hmm. What do you aim to accomplish?
I would like to see a restoration of what government's intended to be. I'm not going into this position to grow it. I'm going in to shrink it. It's bloated. It's been manipulated. People need to understand truly what this position is. And it isn't all public health. Yes, the public health emergency order, Homeland Security is directly under the judge position, but it's a judge in name only. This is truly a chief executive of the county. It's over departments such as elections, IT, human resources, budget and evaluation, sheriff's department, jails, and the court systems, and Parkland Hospital, right? It's an enormous job. We have nearly 2.7 million people in Dallas County, 31 cities, 6,000 county employees. It deserves to be run well. All of those items, and because I think the worst thing that's happened to us over the last several years is the breakdown of trust. And I think about organizational turnarounds and why an organization might fall. Even the biggest, best organizations are not immune to going out of business. And the number one thing that you'll find at the root of it is a lack of trust. And that is what's happening to our country. It's happening with our county. It's what's happening to our medical community because of these politicians like Clay Jenkins
because of lies. Because they're not operating in truth.
Right. And they've used it to gain. And they've done a disservice, and our Dallas County deserves to trust their elections. It deserves to trust their medical community. I can't afford, me personally, and what drives me, what wakes me up every day and gives me the energy to keep going is that Pierce has another upcoming open heart surgery. I cannot afford for the medical community as a whole across our country and in Dallas County to become politicized. And it has become politicized.
And untrustworthy.
And untrustworthy. Yeah. I have to go in and trust that they're going to do right by my son. I have to go in and trust that he's going to have access to care, not based on his status within COVID. We'll say that. And it's life or death. I birthed that child. I took an oath to take care of him for the rest of his life and to advocate for his life. And we should be a culture of life. And we're in a culture of death and destruction. And I refuse to live in that reality. And so my commitment to Dallas County is just to restore.
Yeah.
To restore. And that needs to be done in every department. It's going to be done in a different ways. And we have to reject and stop asking our politicians to lie to us. Everyone's like, tell me your three shiny objects, your three things. Give me your three promises. I said, I've never been in this position before. You should be able to predict my decisions. And that comes from a biblical worldview. And I talk to believers and non-believers. And I say, my biblical worldview matters to you because I know ultimately where outcomes lie. Everything wrong with our society is because a human, man or woman, human has come in and said, I can manipulate outcomes. That's a lie. They cannot. You can have inputs into someone's life. I can invest in Dallas County. I can invest in my children. But ultimately, I don't control their outcome. God does. And so even in the face of evil, I've seen it up close. I know exactly what it looks like. I know how it operates now. I know the game. No matter how close it gets to me, I will never compromise my biblical worldview. And that's a benefit to believers and non-believers because I won't get scared and start thinking I can manipulate your outcomes, which is what our politicians have done.
Well, just Lauren, even it's just by at the granular baseline level, there's truth.
Yes.
And there's absolute truth. The whole notion in this country that truth is fluid, the reason they want truth to be fluid is they don't want to be held accountable.
No.
So today they want to say, oh, it's blue and tomorrow it's purple and it doesn't matter. So you can't actually, it's like nailing Jell-O to the wall.
Yes.
It's like saying, okay, so tell me.
Yes.
What is it? Well, we don't want to tell you. It's complicated. I'm not a biologist.
Mm-hmm.
This is why they won't tell you. No,
it's all relative.
It's all relative. Well, it depends. It's nuanced. No, it's not. It's not. Here's the line I'm going to walk. I'm a son of God. The word of God is my absolute truth. Mm-hmm. Measure me by it.
Yes.
Measure me by that. And if I don't measure up to that, then I need to get right with God. But measure me. I'm putting a plumb line down like any builder. They can't build a single building without having a foundation and a plumb line, but yet they want to run a society like you could just do whatever.
Like it's all fluid.
And then the nepotism just drives me nuts.
Yeah,
okay?
There's so much. Dallas County, can you imagine? We already do so well, right? Because we are so wealthy.
But can you imagine what we could do?
Yes. So we're so wealthy that it's buffered some of the realities
it's
of the crime.
Yeah.
It's masked it. There's crime written on the streets. People's cars are getting stolen. People are getting murdered. I mean, crime is up in all categories. And if they try to say it's down, it's because they've stopped prosecuting it and they've stopped bringing people in.
On that note, Rebecca, can you pull up the Dallas PD endorsement?
Oh, yes. Oh, my gosh. So grateful for that.
That shocked me. To be honest with you, because we work, right? And then look, they're not deep conservative.
Yeah.
Okay, they're not. But yet, I want to read something here.
This is Dallas police. For immediate release, this was October 7th, endorsing you, okay, which is beautiful. I want to read it. This is DPA president, okay, Dallas Police Association president. Clay Jenkins has shown little to no interest in getting tough against violent criminals who target the most vulnerable. Yes, we've seen that for years. Thankfully, voters have a smart, tough on crime alternative in Republican Lauren Davis for county judge. Praise God. This is the Dallas Police Association saying enough is enough. How long has Clay been in that position?
He's been in there 12 years. It's a 4-year term.
Okay. So
he does not deserve 16 years.
It's done.
It's done.
It's done. He had his run. Now it's done. Now we need to go clean up this place because it's time to get Dallas, the equilibrium back in Dallas. We've got to be, and Lauren, I asked you straight up, the day you told me we're going to run.
Yeah, I know.
You know, I looked at you and I said, you get in that office, we're going to prosecute crimes against children.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to, and you're like, yes, Yaku. And I know we will. And it's not the case at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and look at Chicago. Mm-hmm. That's what happens. When you have a Lori Lightfoot and you have the Pritzker family that's demonic, right?
It's a culture of death in Chicago.
Are you kidding me? The Pritzkers are investing in trying to implant wombs into men.
Oh my God.
This is what the Pritzkers are investing in. It's demonic. It's an anti-God movement.
Mm-hmm.
At the least, just bring God back into the picture and bring truth back into the picture. And we'll do a whole lot better. I think a lot of our societal problems are gone when we just do that. So, man, I wanted to have a conversation just to show a little bit about where you come from and that it's not just by happenstance. And I ask our viewers and listeners to pray for you.
Thank you. Look, we have prayer going every morning. A wonderful prayer warrior, Deborah Waters, felt a calling. It started, I think, 2 weeks ago now. Every morning at 7:30 a.m. at our headquarters, she's in person praying for our county and for my race.
Yeah. Look, it's and there's so many other races November 8th, but this is one that's a big one for the whole country.
It's a tipping point.
It's a tipping point, and it's also putting a stake in the ground and saying, we're going to go take a stand. So thanks for being here. God bless you, Lauren. Thanks for being a mom.
Yeah.
That steps out, and for all the moms that step out, bring your husbands with you. Come on, we need the guys. We cannot, don't just, I know the guys building business and doing all these things, but
there's always time to fight.
Side by side. Let's
side
do it
by
together.
Side. Yes. Okay.
Thank you. God bless you. Talk to you guys next time. Thanks.